All right, have a seat. Okay, so are we supposed to speak about food, right? Eating, yes? Vegetarianism, eating, you are the eaters, right? Not sure which aspect of the subject interests you, but there's a lot of things to say here. So I think I'd rather respond to the issues of interest to you, and if you ask questions, I'd be happy to answer, but let's begin by lay out some of the issues involved here and some of the Jewish approach to this subject, very deep area, many applications, and then please stop me if something's not clear or if you have questions on any particular aspect that I'm able to answer, I'll be happy to try. Many aspects. What does eating mean? Why do we eat? Why was the world created in such a way that we need to eat? What is the meaning of kosher food? Why some things can be eaten, some things shouldn't be? Why does that apply to Jews and not to non-Jews? What about the health aspects? What's Judaism's take on things like food additives and colorings and health things? Are you required to be concerned about that? Are you not? What about vegetarianism? Why is it okay to kill animals and eat them? Is there something wrong with that? Is it okay to be a vegetarian if you're Jewish and you want to be? There are many, many questions here. Did I cover most of the things of... Let's begin maybe with the concept of eating altogether. Many strange things about it. First of all, we are needing to eat to sustain ourselves. Secondly, eating is a peculiar activity because it is absorbing material from the world, which is both pure and nutritious and also not. You know that what the body does with food is it separates that which is nutritious and necessary and then excretes the remainder as extremely offensive process, right? Human being, very strange. Human beings is a creation that is holy. You have a holiness, a tremendous sanctity, the human being. That's the essence of why killing someone is wrong. It's because of the great sanctity of the human being. And yet this inner being, which is so elevated, is housed in a vessel which is very problematic. The human body... it's very problematic. It is very beautiful from one perspective, but it's very problematic from another. It's finite, it's limited, it's given to decomposition and disintegration, right? If you don't take care of it, it smells bad. It excretes waste in a very offensive, within one's own body is contained very offensive excrement. It's not just close to one, but within oneself, right? Very strange thing that. What does that mean? Why are we created that way? The deep sources say that when Adam was created, right, this week we read about the creation of man and woman, when Adam was created, there was no excretion. There was no excretion. The body didn't excrete. He ate only food that was pure, and the food was completely what's called nivla ba'evarim in Hebrew. Nivla ba'evarim. The food was absorbed completely into the organs and limbs of the body. There was no process of excretion. In fact, according to Kabbalistic sources, it wasn't possible to excrete because there was no back. Right? Are you all? I'm sure you're all accomplished black belt Kabbalists. Yes? No? No? You're not? As any Kabbalist knows, when Adam and Eve were created, they were created as one androgynous being fused at the back. Right? Adam and Eve, there were two faces. One was male. One was female. And there were only two fronts. There was no back. Right? The back is always the place of spiritual darkness. Right? The front is always the side of spiritual elevation. That's why the Hebrew word for panim, which means the face. Who speaks Hebrew here? Anybody? Yes, no. The Hebrew word for face, which is panim, is exact. Pan in Hebrew means an outer face, right? Pan, panim, right, is an outer face of something. And yet the same word in Hebrew is pnim, which means shows you the inside, right? The same root in Hebrew, which means outside, means inside. Isn't that amazing? Anyone out there? Maybe you didn't eat this evening? Did you have dinner? Did you sustain yourselves? That's called davar v'hipucho, right? Yeah, one thing and its opposite in the same place. Panim is the outside and pnim is the inside, because the face is the place where you see the inside. Right? You see into the... But the back is the opposite. The back is the place of non-identification. The back is called in Hebrew achor, which is the same word as acher, which means otherness, strangeness, foreignness, right? You cannot recognize a person. From the face is a place of relationship and recognition, uniqueness of the human being. From the back is the opposite. The back is the side of darkness, unrecognizability, foreignness, and excretion. The front is the side of relationship and purity. That's called achoraim in Hebrew. You know that in Hebrew, idolatry, the worship of idols, is called avodat gilulim, the worship of excrement. Why? The worship of dung. It's not only an insulting term for something that is spiritually fallen. It's because there are two facets of reality. The face is the kedusha, the real thing, and idolatry is the wrong grasp of the same thing. It is an acknowledgement that there's something beyond the human being, but it's the opposite of what it should be. Instead of taking the nutritious part, they are taking the fallen part, the dark side of the spiritual world, and that's why it's called that. Now, when the human being was created, there was no such thing. When man and woman were created, there was no back. So there was only the sides of kedusha and purity. There was no place of foreignness or danger, spiritual danger, and of course there was no excretion. They ate in the garden food that was spiritually prepared. In fact, the Medrash says that the angels prepared their food, strained their wine, and prepared what they ate. And therefore the food was absorbed in their bodies. There was no need to excrete. After they were separated and torn apart into man and woman who are separate, who now must face each other and bond in a relationship by relating to each other, the beauty of that being that they can now have a meaningful relationship through their own effort, the danger and dark side of that meaning that the back is now exposed, then they entered that relationship, and of course they ate food from a tree, which was the original sin. Eating goes right to the heart of the fault in creation. And because they ate the fruit of that tree, they became condemned to live in a world where death is apparent. And death also is part of the human body. Now, part of the food needs to be excreted as waste, which is offensive and connected to the death forces. Once in history, human beings almost reached that level again. That was when the Jewish people left Egypt and moved through the Sinai desert. They reached a level almost like Adam before the sin. And then when they did that, they ate again that same food. Manna, the man that fell in the desert, was that kind of food that is completely absorbed. And when the Jewish people moved through the desert and ate man, there was no excretion. Right? As the Jews moved through the desert, again, the bodies did not excrete, because they reached that level of sanctity where they were able to eat food of pure holiness, and such food is no waste product that needs to be excreted. In fact, you know that the manna, in Hebrew, in English it's called manna, which means nothing. In Hebrew, man means what? The Hebrew word man, they called it man, ki manu, because what is it? Very strange thing. You know that there's an axiom in the spiritual world that when a thing is limited, then you can say what it is. When a thing's unlimited, you can't say what it is. How can you say a specific word about something that has no limits? Any word that gives it a definition would be a limitation. Yes? So, for example, you want to talk about God. You can't say what God is. So therefore you say, what is he? You ask a question. Ma gadlu ma'aseach Hashem? How great are your works, Hashem? Or ma rabu ma'aseach? How many are your works? Mi kamocha ba'elim Hashem? Who is like you? In English, you hear this as a sort of Shakespearean rhetorical, say, you know, oh who, oh how great, oh how, ma tovu alecha. But it's not rhetorical, poetic expression. It is when you can't say what a thing is, then the technique you use is you don't say what it is, you say what is it? Because I see a lot of blank faces. Is anyone out there with me? When you ask a question, you invite always more. Right? In fact, Adam, the human being in Hebrew, adds up to 45. Aleph, Dalet, Mem, Adam, 45. Exactly the same numerical equivalent as the Hebrew word, ma. The human being is a what? You can't say what he is. That will be limiting him. Again, I see still no enlightened faces. The man, the word for human in Hebrew is Adam. Rearrange the letters, it spells ma'od. What does ma'od mean? Very. Very is a word that whatever you have makes it more. The human being is always what you see, is not what you get. What you see is only the tip of the iceberg in the physical world. The spiritual extends way beyond the human being. Therefore, the correct word for Adam in the Kabbalistic system, the word ma, which adds up to 45, or Adam, is the fourth of four spiritual worlds, and it's always the one of essence, the one where all activity is taking place. So therefore, Adam, the human being, is a creature about whom you can say what? What is he? When you want to say, talk about Hashem, ma rabu masach, how great are your works? Right? You can't say, and therefore, manna was something that was indescribable spiritually. It was a spiritual food in the world. Right? They couldn't say what it was. It was multi-potential, multi-energy. For example, when you ate the manna, it tasted like? What did it taste like? Like anything you wanted. Right? It says, Kelishad Hashamin. The word shad in Hebrew always means, shin dalad in Hebrew means something subject to imagination. Right? You know what the shadim are? Not shadim are? Shadim, ma? They're the twilight zone creatures that are half spiritual, half physical. They're produced by human imagination. The same word in Hebrew means the breast from which the child suckles. Why? Because the Gemara says when a baby nurses from his mother, he tastes anything in the milk. Whatever, yeah? All. And therefore, they called it Kelashad Hashamin. The manna was called this word, which means that whatever you wanted, you tasted in the manna. It's a multi-potential. That means it's not fixed in the finite world. And therefore, when they saw it, they couldn't give it a name. So they said, this is what? This is what is it? Are we getting anywhere? And when you ate food, the Ramban says that man was crystallized Shekhinah. The manna was divine presence crystallized into a food. And that's what they were able to eat. When you eat food like that, it becomes completely part of you. There's no need to excrete and there's no possibility of excretion. So this is all very mysterious. What does it mean? I mean, is this of interest to you? Do you? Yes? No? I spent all night talking about something you're not interested in. If you have other questions on other subjects, I'm happy to talk about. The secret of food is that the human being is comprised of two elements. There's the vessel, which is the body, and there's the inner core, which is the spiritual being, or the neshama, the soul, or the five levels of soul. And these two are opposite. They pull apart like magnets that repel each other. They are rejecting each other. The body being finite and animal and subject to all the contamination that we spoke about before is not the appropriate place for a soul that comes from the spiritual world. That's a spark of infinity and spirituality. The two do not go well together. Right? The Midrashim indicate that when the soul is put into the body, it cries. It feels terribly, terribly frustrated and pained to be banished from its place of spiritual source and exiled into a body which is extremely repulsive. You're talking about ultimate spiritual refinement, banished into an animal body full of lusts and cravings and contamination. Exact opposite of the place where a soul should be. Where a soul should be is in the spiritual world as part of Hashem. To be exiled into the body, into the physical world, into a body, is very problematic. And therefore, these two repel each other and need to be held together by force. Right? The force that holds body and soul together is called food. Food is the energy that's needed to keep the soul in the body. And it constantly takes energy and work. If you don't eat, the two begin to separate. You become faint, which means that the soul starts to distract itself from the body. If you don't eat for long enough, you become unconscious. And if you don't eat for long enough after that, then the soul leaves completely, right? Food is necessary to provide the body with what it needs to keep the soul anchored in the body, right? That's what food does. And that's why it has to be pure. And that's why negative food spiritually can cause such damage health-wise to the body and spiritually to the soul, right? Unkosher food is metamtem es alev. Metamtem et alev. It closes the Jewish heart. It makes you insensitive spiritually. That's why it's so incredibly important to eat food that is absolutely pure from a spiritual perspective. So that is the nature of food. You see this in many ways. A person eats, it is keeping the soul in the body. Let's take a few examples to try to flesh that out. First of all, you see clearly that if you don't eat, the two separate. Secondly, eating is done with the mouth. The first organ, the organ of ingesting food, is the mouth. The mouth is always an organ of connecting worlds. The mouth is the place of the body that connects opposite worlds. Right? For example, the mouth has three functions in the human being. Right? Basically, eating, as we said, speaking, and a human kiss. Right? That is a natural expression of affection between people. All of these being vested in the same part of the body are manifestations of the same energy. Eating is maintaining connection between spirit and body. Speaking is connecting spirit and physical again. When you speak, you take a spiritual idea, an ethereal abstraction, which is an idea, and you give it enough form in the physical world to be connected in the physical world. Or to put it from another perspective, speaking is what connects people. Right? When you speak, either in words or any gesture or expression, is really a speaking, is a deep connection between people. Right? In fact, this is why, I can't go into this in detail, but intimacy between husband and wife is also called speaking. Right? Many times the Torah, when it wants to talk about marital intimacy, and it wants to speak in elevated and refined terms, the Torah always speaks in a refined way about these things. So it says speaking when it means intimacy. For example, it talks about a woman behaving immorally, and it says, achla umach sapia, achla umach, she ate and wiped her mouth, and said, I never did anything wrong. And there clearly is talking about a woman in an illicit relationship. But in order not to talk in a crude fashion, the Torah talks in a euphemistic way, using a term that is an indirect term to refer to what it means. But obviously, when the Torah does that, it always chooses a term that is borrowed and distant and refined, but in essence the same thing. So when you talk about an intimacy, and you want to talk about it in a refined way, you don't talk about something completely irrelevant. You don't say playing football, you know, or, you know, chess, you know. You talk about something that is, so eating, right, is very much the same. Eating, speaking, kissing are all elevated euphemisms, right, for the same. For example, the Mishnah says a man was seen alone with a woman, right? A woman was seen alone with a man in a very improper circumstance. So it says, Ra'uha medaberes. Ra'uha medaberet. They saw her speaking to a man. The Mishnah doesn't mean she was speaking to the man. It means she was having an immoral relationship with this particular man. And that is put across in the Mishnah as speaking, right? And there the Gemara makes it plain that speaking is not that she was talking to him. You know, she wasn't selling him an insurance policy. She was engaged in an immoral relationship. And the Torah is used because speaking is a form of connection. So the word Hebrew word dibur doesn't only mean speaking with the mouth. The language of dabar in Hebrew means to take an idea and manifest that idea in control in the practical world. Like dabar echad lador means a leader of a generation. Or yadber amim tachtenu. It means to take control of other nations. It means to take an idea or a plan and to execute it in practice, right? Speech with the mouth is only a particular example of an idea put into...
understand why dibur can mean something spiritual and it can connect it with inshallah, but the idea of eating kind of contradicts the whole idea of Yom Kippur, because that's, you're supposed to be empty and you're supposed to even eat, and that's supposed to be the spiritual day of the year.
What's the problem? You detach from the body and give food. Exactly that.
You're not supposed to eat.
Exactly the opposite.
Eating,
slowly, one second.
Not eating itself is what connects you more to God and to your Shamaway.
Of course it does. It's because it takes you out of the body. Making a mistake.
So the fact that we're eating is beneficial to the Shamaway, you said.
It keeps it in the body. On Yom Kippur, you want to free it from the body. That's what fasting...
control over it.
What?
If it's detached from you, then what good does that do to you? If you're not, it's not in you.
It gets in contact with the higher world. It's not limited to your body.
But God's come down here. He's more open to you. And know that
exactly the opposite. You're insisting on saying it exactly the opposite. Stay with me. Listen.
Yeah.
What happens is this. Normally you eat. What does it do? Keeps your soul in your body, right?
Yeah.
Which is very good for you. You're alive. But it brings your soul down into the animal domain. One day a year, you let the soul fly. One day a year, you step out of your body. You know why you take your shoes off? Because your shoes are what lock you into the world. The lowest part of your body fits into your shoes. The Hebrew word na'al means a lock. Shoe in Hebrew, lock. What's the connection between a shoe and a lock? It locks you into the finite world. The lowest part of your body, your feet, fit in your shoes, and that takes you through the world. The lowest part of your soul, called your nefesh, the lowest part of the neshama, fits into your body, and the body takes you through the world. That's why death in Hebrew, or spirituality, is always regarded as taking off the shoes. You're familiar with it. That's why when the Kohanim serve in the Beit HaMikdash, they take their shoes off. They're in a higher world. When Hashem speaks to a prophet, the first thing he tells him is take off your shoes. Because I want you to lift yourself into a higher world. Chalitza, when a woman takes off a man's shoe, she's saying to him, you refuse to marry me and bring a soul into the world. Keeping them apart, she takes off his shoe again and again. On Yom Kippur, you take off your shoes. You float out of the body into another world. You pay no attention to the body. All five parts of the soul on Yom Kippur are freed from all five parts of the body. So that's why there's five things you can't do on Yom Kippur. All of them are detachment from the body. You can't wear shoes, you lift yourself out of your body. You can't wash your body for pleasure. You lift yourself out of that. You don't anoint the body pleasurably. You lift yourself out of that. You don't engage in marital intimacy. You take your body out of that, right? So Yom Kippur. So what you're doing on Yom Kippur is you are taking yourself out of the physical world. You're allowing.